at her, and she gave me a microscopic smile. She was strikingly beautiful, which was pretty much standard for models on board. Nobody's doing it for a living, after all. They're paid by automatic copies of everyone's lightbox output. When I was learning to draw on Earth, there was more variety in body types. 10 minutes left on this pose, Jacob, the organizer said. That was about as much time as I cared to spend on the left-handed exercise. I walked halfway around the room to get her in a simple profile, head turned away. No need to make things difficult. I didn't even attempt a gesture drawing, which would come out like an infant's nearly random scribble. I'm so thoroughly right-handed. So I concentrated on a contour drawing, slow and careful, that might wind up looking something like her. My intense concentration on the left hand may have affected the left side of my brain, which supposedly would make me more analytical than usual. I suddenly realized what was wrong. Transferring the stylus to my right hand, I pushed the corner button and printed in block letters, "Is the life support system on Ars under repair?" It answered, "No, everything is normal." I got up so suddenly I even startled Sherry, who flinched. Becca was on duty at the machine, doing a crossword puzzle. "Bruce in there now?" She gave me a funny look. 1989. I thought you had a meeting. I'm just going in and out. Observer. Meeting's not till after dinner. Okay. She tapped some buttons and the chair slid out. Sweet dreams. I didn't need the purge or catheter for a short trip. As I slid into the darkness, though, I wondered how long it might be. I felt the box in my pocket and opened my eyes. 1989. According to mainstream history, 1989 was actually the last year of the 20th century, with the death of Soviet and Eastern European communism. Then there were 12 years of conservative consolidation until the 21st century began on 11 September 2001. Berlin had been cut in two by a wall for 28 years to prevent people defecting from the impoverished communist East. Scores of them died trying to climb the wall, shot down by guards. Today, the wall was coming down. A drunken crowd, drunk on joy as much as beer, shouted and cheered as two men, a long-haired student and a burly worker, swung picks at the graffiti-covered wall. A power drill from the East Berlin side was grinding holes through the brick and cement. Swirls of dust glittered in the glare from thousands of auto headlights. It was bitter cold after midnight, but the large crowd was gleefully hammering away and pocketing souvenirs. A woman shouting in Polish passed around coffee from two large urns. The exhilaration of being part of history was palpable, the ending and beginning. Bruce was nowhere evident, which was not surprising. I looked for myself or Electro or some other obvious manifestation of the machine. A young man stood next to me. "This is one of my favorite times," he said with a slight German accent. It took me a moment to place him, Albert Einstein in his 20s. "Am I right?" I asked. He nodded. "Pretty early. Come with me." We walked away from the crowd down a side street. He pulled a large key from his pocket and led us into a pawn shop. Smell of dust and lacquer and linseed oil. We went past rows of hunting rifles and shop tools and office machines to the rear of the shop where there was a plain table and two chairs. He snapped on a desk lamp. "Sit." Old leather creak, a comfortable chair. "Acoustic deficit in ours," I said, "like the olfactory deficit in New York." He nodded slowly and took a battered old pipe from his vest pocket. "You didn't hear the life support background, so you made the intuitive leap. Very good." "So we're in a simulation, all the time?" He lit the pipe with a wooden match, sweet smoke mixed with sulfur dioxide. "A simulation within a simulation right now. Berlin." "But aboard ship." He tossed the match into a brass ashtray, clink, and tamped the tobacco down with his thumb. "All of it, yes." "Did we ever leave Earth?" "Heh, You've never asked that before. Yes, you left Earth. Left Europa. None of that is made up. He puffed hard a couple of times, then blew gently on the glowing coal. Never asked that before? You're in a loop, Jacob. We've had some variant of this conversation 38 times. Okay. I was starting to see it. Go on. Your body is resting in Nepenthe stasis in zero-G comfort in Mech's axis. Has been for almost 100 years. Doing the same thing over and over in virtuality? With variations. Once you know what's going on, I send you back to Europa, the launch. Why Europa? My memory's finite. Large, but finite. Once you're at Europa, you all have the same physical surround. I could have gone back to L4, but there's no need. All of us? All 800? More like 600, I'm afraid. Nepenthe itself doesn't work, combined with the Becker-Sendrick process past about 80 years. The brain dims out. People are revived in an infantile, uneducable state. So you take the brain out for a walk? Keep it exercised? That's a way to look at it. He tapped the pipe on the ashtray with a brass chiming sound, smoothed down the ashes with his thumb again, and relit it. I have what amounts to a total map of your mental state on Europa's launch day. I can put you back into that state whenever it's necessary, when the illusion of virtuality starts to break down. You're going to say that's impossible. Tripping for over 2 years, and then you hit the reset button? With 600 clients interacting? Impossible is one word that comes to mind, yeah. Well, you only interact with about 50 of them, but you're right. That would have been impossible in your time. For one client, let alone 619. There were hundreds of millions of people in Nepenthe stasis on Earth when the drug's limitation became clear. There was a crash program. He gestured with the pipe. This is the result. I felt the surface and edge of the table, the irregularities in the shellac, a small splinter I could pry out with my fingernail. Is it always like this? Berlin, 1989? No. Sometimes you go for several more months, even up to the time you take the Nepenthe injection. It depends on how successful you are in denying the evidence of your senses. Sometimes it's a couple of months earlier. I don't control the details of your virtualities. You don't do the same things over and over. That's reassuring, though I might as well, since I don't remember any of it. There was the sound of a crash outside, then cheering and horns blowing. How far have we gone? More than 2 light-years, about a tenth of the way. He reached into his coat pocket and pulled out the black box. My pocket was empty. You can imagine, Jacob, how much this level of interaction is costing me. One Chinese box too many. It's time for us to say goodbye for another couple of years. Wait, what is the ground reality? Is Aspera a ghost ship full of semi-corpses? Or is life still going on around them? Go find out. He pushed the button and disappeared in a shower of dark blue sparks. I blinked at the light and rubbed my eyes. Becca was gone. Cronkite handed me a glass of water. You knew all along. No, sir. I will be reset back to Europa, too, and start over. Of course, lying was second-order touring behavior. I got off the couch, stretched, and looked around. Where are my clothes? Gone, sir. You won't need them. Well, they weren't real in the first place. Neither was this. But the film of dust on everything looked real. I opened the door to cold silence. Anybody home? I shouted, and there wasn't even an echo. The lights were very dim. Emergency lighting, I supposed. What more does one person need? I opened the door to my right and walked down the spiraling steps to the ag level. Automatic small lights switched on as I walked and off as I passed. There seemed to be nothing alive on the ag level. The fruit trees were bare skeletons. The hydroponic tanks held dry residue with a stale frisson of compost. I walked toward the main lift through what used to be the citrus grove. On impulse, I broke off a stick and sniffed it. Just dry wood, no memory of lemon or lime. The lift door was open and dark. I trudged up the stairs to the park level. No surprises. The grass was brown and dry and crackled underfoot. The pond had evaporated and held nothing but the desiccated ghosts of aquatic plants. No pathetic duck skeletons, at least. Did the last people eat them? Or did they get tiny doses of nepenthe? "Hello?" I shouted, and at least got an echo this time, then a fainter one, and finally the dead silence. I walked just to make some noise. I used to pass by here in the dark of early mornings, sit by the pond and listen to the constant susurrus of the life support system. Sometimes a sleepy duck would paddle over, begging. Back up the stairs, my tread lighter as I approached the zero-G axis. The last 20 feet there were just handholds. 600 people floated in the dim red light, more or less uniform in their relaxed nakedness. I was glad their eyes were closed. It took me about 10 minutes to find myself. Kate was right there, and between us a boy of 9 or 10. His face resembled my face in pictures taken before the war. Had I risked dying for a decade to watch him grow? Probably not. He might have taken my last name, and so his body was filed next to mine. Or it might have been Kate's sentiment. I tried not to think of them as dead, but then the boy had never been actually alive in the last iteration of my life, and Kate had been a figment of the rock-solid dream that had been that life. I launched myself down the stairwell, then caught a handhold and tiptoed down, missing the gecko slippers. Got off at level 5 and, choosing the wrong direction, walked more than halfway around to get to my old room, or rather, my new one, Vivian's. The door didn't open to my thumbprint, but I found it wasn't locked. I pushed it open and was confronted with a room full of junk, a jumble of pictures, icons, jewelry, holo boxes, paintings, my walking stick and life cover, and Dad's painting from Maine. So they'd taken my suggestion about using the room for storage. I slid open the drawer, and the bottle was gone. Did I drink it? Never know. I backed out and eased the door shut. Suddenly lights glared, and the world was full of sound, not least a loud cry of surprise. I turned around, and there was a tired-looking woman staring at me, a child's hand in hers, with another child, a naked infant, balanced on her hip. She and the other child were wearing simple shifts, not too clean. The daughter took her thumb out of her mouth and said, "Ma, why don't he have clothes?" She said something rapid and harsh to me. I shook my head. She looked at the child and spoke slowly. "He be a old one." Then to me, "Ye be a old one." An old one. Yes, I suppose. "We say you sometime. Gay back to sleep." She pushed past me, dragging the child, who stared back over her shoulder, thumb again in place. Looking down on the park from the balcony, I saw almost as many children as adults. Still a total illusion, I supposed. A possible future. I stepped back to my door and pulled it open. A man and a pregnant woman sat at the table, eating. They started. "Sorry." I eased the door shut, and when it clicked, the darkness returned. The silence and dry staleness. Over the balcony, everything was still and sere. Which was the reality? Perhaps they were equally real, equally false. Almost in a trance, I walked back down to the office, crunching over part of the park to the side stairs. I could ask the machine, but I think I had its answer. Cronkite was waiting patiently, with its usual alert, benign expression. "Shall we go back to Europa?" "Not yet, no." I sat on the couch and leaned back. The deadness was like a persistent bad taste in my mouth. "Send me someplace pleasant." As the darkness closed over me, I remembered an old man, amused and amusing, with a whisper of white beard. Dr. Schaumann, who taught us that life and death were alike.